Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and I'm joined today by co-host Kristen Polacy. Kristen became a mother for the first time this year. Congratulations! And she's in the midst of finishing her chiropractic training at University of Southern California Health Sciences, where she got stuck interning with me. Sorry. Her work with our prenatal clients and her own journey through motherhood have left her on a quest searching for information that can be helpful to new moms. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Our guest today, Bailey Gaddis, is an Ojai, California-based childbirth preparation educator, birth doula, and hypnotherapist. She contributes to media outlets such as Disney's Babbel, Huffington Post, Cosmo, Redbook, and others, and is the author of a fascinating book called Feng Shui Mommy. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks so much.
By the way, those are all my favorite magazines.
Mine too.
So, you have so much interestingness to you. Before we even talk about this book, I got to find out how you became you. When did you get interested in birth-related stuff?
Yeah, well, I used to work in the IVF field a long time ago. I was an egg donor coordinator and a surrogacy coordinator. My mom's been an IVF nurse for 25 years.
Oh, wow.
So that's what I did before becoming pregnant. And she was also a hypnobirthing practitioner. So when I became pregnant with my son, she started to teach me hypnobirthing. I became addicted to pregnancy and how to make it more comfortable. I really was convinced when I actually went through childbirth and was able to have a fairly comfortable unmedicated birth. Of course, it was challenging and intense, but it really sold me on how effective it can be to work with your mind-body connection during birth.
So somewhat in your blood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like a family business kind of.
Yes, I have doctors, nurses that are in the family, and I never thought I would ever go into a hospital in relation to work. I thought that that was so strange, and my mom said, well, I don't know, just see what happens. And sure enough, I go to a hospital about once every other week to support a woman in birth.
As a doula.
As a doula, as a birth doula.
So first you studied hypnobirthing for yourself.
Exactly.
With your mother.
Yes.
And then you became a hypnobirthing specialist?
Yes. About when my son was about 3 months old, I thought, I still do not know nearly enough about this. I want to learn more. I'm really interested in this. So I took he and my husband down to San Diego for a week, became certified, started teaching about a month later. And then about 6 months after that, clients started asking if I could attend their births. And I got really freaked out and thought, I don't know enough about that. So I went back to the Hypnobirthing Institute and became trained through them as a birth doula.
Wow. So your clients from teaching the classes
exactly.
Wanted you to be there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're always this calming, but you kind of have just a very calming energy.
Thank you.
That I would associate with Ojai.
Yeah. Yes. It is very Ojai, isn't it? Yeah, I think my training that I got after my birth doula training as a hypnotherapist, it was very intensive and gave me some of that, but also just being a mom and trying to stay calm.
A calm mom.
Survive.
Yeah, exactly, survive. Yeah, I adopted the calm mom voice.
Yes.
How for you, for your own pregnancy and birth, how did hypnobirthing help you? You said you had an unmedicated birth that was, I think you called it fairly comfortable.
Fairly comfortable.
Yeah. I wasn't even fairly comfortable at the birth of our child, so.
Yeah, I think it just gave my mind somewhere else to go. When I first became pregnant, I was told, well, just get an epidural, which I think is still a great option for some women. But for me, I felt like, I'm not sure if that's what I want. But I had a lot of fear. I had a lot of fear about the pain, you know, because I've always been told it's the most painful experience you'll ever go through. And so I thought, okay, well, of course, I'll just get the meds. But as I started to learn, you know, about what my body would actually be doing during birth and, you know, the release of endorphins and just got more educated, I thought maybe I can do this without medication, and I want to. There's plenty of women that don't want to do that, which is fine. But for me, that was really something I wanted to explore. So during birth, although, of course, I experienced that pain, but through the training, I was able to perceive it as something different because I knew there was nothing wrong with it. You know, it's really one of the only times in life where you feel such intensity in your body, but there's nothing wrong with you. You're not broken. You're just having a baby.
Meaning we're so used to pain being associated with something danger.
Exactly. Right?
And so our nervous system is, by design, meant to kick in and protect us from that danger.
Right. Yes.
So through hypnobirthing, you're able to tell yourself, and I think other cultures actually have the concept of pain that's good for you. Like, and we sort of do, but not in this setting. So it's sort of, we go to the gym and pay people to torture us. No pain, no gain, you know.
Exactly.
But then all of a sudden, I remember I had a patient who was an Iron Woman competitor, and she won in her category. And I asked her, what's your birth plan going to be? Just out of curiosity to see what she was leaning towards. And she said, oh, I'm going to get the epidural right away.
Right.
And I said, oh, why? Not in a judgmental way. It just surprised me because she's so tough.
Right.
And she's like, wow, you know, that's so painful. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. You torture yourself
right.
in
wow.
ways that I can't even read about without being in pain.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not good. Able to do this, nobody is going to be able
right.
to do this. And
right.
she actually just didn't know that there were benefits to not having the epidural. She's like,
yeah.
you know, why should I not have it?
Right.
And so I gave her some things to read just to get a more well-rounded perspective. And she killed it. She did it, you know, no medication. But she went in with a very open birth plan. She's like, I don't know. I've never been there. Don't know what
right.
it's going to be like.
Right. And we don't know. It's always unknown. We can prepare as much as possible. But then I always equate it to actors. You know, they put in so much preparation. They learn their lines. But then when they actually perform, they kind of let it all go. And I think of birth like that. You know, you have your plan. You go to your classes. You become informed. But then when you step into it, you don't know what your body's going to do. And hopefully you have people around you that you trust that can make sure that you and baby are safe, which is, you know, really what we all want. That's our first priority. But yeah, to just kind of let it all go.
And talking about movies, I feel like a lot of movies or anything that we really know about birth, they kind of portray birth as a trauma.
Yes.
Right? If you ever see in a movie, it's
uh-huh.
like the lady screaming at the top of her lungs and she's like, I'm going to, then like there's some comedy and they're like, oh, the baby's crowning because she's like screaming in the other room.
It's
and, like,
funny
breaking
that you
her
say
husband's
that.
Hand.
Yeah. I had a client who was shooting a TV show while she was pregnant and they made her character pregnant. And uh-huh. on her last day of shooting, her character gives birth.
Yeah.
And they did the birth scene, and then all of a sudden, you know, the notes back from her director were bigger. We want bigger, louder. It's not, you know, not enough drama, basically.
Right, yeah.
So she had to do it again, bigger and louder mm-hmm. to pretend give birth to her character's baby. And on the last take, her actual water broke.
Oh my gosh.
And she wasn't far from her due date, but it was so surreal. She's surrounded by all these,
wow.
you know, she's in a hospital gown, surrounded by people that look like doctors and residents and nurses.
And they all start fainting.
And they're like, oh my goodness, what do we do? And she's like,
that's
nothing.
Great.
I'm going home to take a shower and
yeah.
I'm going to have my baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but that's, you're right, the drama, that's what we're exposed to when mm-hmm. it comes to childbirth is drama. Kristen, did you use any kind of childbirth education tools before? Because you just had a baby less than a year ago.
Yeah, I actually did the Bradley Method, and that's where I went to go learn more about birth. And then we took, I think, some like small lactation classes through the local hospital.
Did you find them helpful?
I did, actually. The Bradley Method, I think, gave us really good tools. Not only just about birth in general, which I think I've been exposed to from school because I was mm-hmm. kind of right in the middle of all of our education. So you're just like, I know where my uterus is.
That's the first step.
Yeah. Which I thought I was, you know, ahead of the game, but
uh-huh.
I guess not. But I think it also really helped my husband figure out how to help me.
Right.
Because I didn't think that I was going to use a doula, but then I went to a midwife, which I loved.
Yeah.
And he was like, but I want to be your doula. And I'm like, okay. So it really inspired him, actually, to kind of be really, really involved, and he wanted to be the first person to touch our son,
yeah.
and he got to.
That's really cool.
So, yeah, I think it more inspired him and made me feel more calm and less fearful.
It's funny. I'm a doula, and my wife's a doula, and every time we have a baby, we hire a doula. And
yeah.
I think it's because at our own birth, I want to be the husband, the loving, supporting partner,
mm-hmm.
which is a totally different role, at
mm-hmm.
least in my mind, than the
yeah.
doula. But it's neat that dads and partners are getting a lot more hands-on than they used to be. I mean, up until roughly the 70s, we weren't even allowed in the room. It was sort of like we're outside pacing, having a cigar
right.
and chocolate bar, and eventually they tell you your kids are like, woo, we did
uh-huh.
it. And now all of a sudden, it was a quick shift. And all of a sudden, it's like not only you were allowed in, but now you're the coach. Good luck. You know,
yeah.
We don't know what to do.
And I think for some dads, it's probably terrifying if you're not like in that mind space. Mm-hmm. You know, like I would be terrified myself. Like, how do I help you?
You know, and you see your partner in this intensity and pain and. And sometimes I feel like when I'm a doula and I see the laboring woman's mother in the room, you know, she sees her daughter in pain and freaks out, and she like goes to tackle the anesthesiologist, and her daughter's like, "No, mom, I don't want that right now."
I know.
It's hard, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Right.
Is you did you Bailey become a hypnotherapist separate from your hypnobirthing training?
I did because, so it was kind of similar to the birth doula story. I had clients asking, oh, can I do private sessions with you for hypnotherapy? And I said, I just have these scripts that I was given. Let me go back to school. So I spent a year, I went to HMI, it's a school in Los Angeles for hypnotherapy. Oh my gosh, how it was like 700 to 800 hours of training.
Oh,
it was really
wow.
intensive, but amazing. And so I have my private practice, and I mainly work with pregnant women, new moms, and children.
But you can do general hypnotherapy
exactly.
as well.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
700 to 800 hours of training sounds like a lot immediately, but I went to massage therapy school, which was 1,000 hours of training, but at least like 300 of that you're being massaged by somebody.
That sounds amazing. I did not get that.
You're not being hypnotized for many of those hours?
No. Yeah. Well, actually, yeah, that was a nice part.
Yeah.
I did get some practice with that. Yeah.
Some schools are easier than other schools.
Right, yeah. Not as good as massage school, but
yeah.
It is
I
a
did
nice
chiropractic part. School and massage school at the same time. So I was in chiropractic school from like 7 to 4, and then I'd run over to the massage school and be there from like 6 to 10 at nighttime.
Oh my gosh.
There was a lot of overlap, but sometimes, you know, when your partner's practicing on you, they need feedback, and I'm just like, my only feedback was like,
yeah, exactly.
30 seconds into
I guess that's good feedback.
Yeah, unless they touch my feet. I'm the most ticklish person on the planet. When I graduated, they dubbed me Tickle Me Elliot.
Oh, my gosh. That's
my
amazing.
Nickname. So you have this trio of things that you bring to birth. You have hypnobirthing and your hypnotherapist and a childbirth and a childbirth educator. But is that the hypnobirthing?
So I still teach the hypnobirthing, but just through the last 3.5 years of being a doula and just being exposed to so many different types of birth, I also have a separate method that I've just started to teach, and it draws upon all of the experiences I've had, the training I've had. That's mainly an online course right now. Most of my in-person classes are still mainly hypnobirthing, but it just touches a little bit more on the pain aspect in a good way. Hypnobirthing is amazing, but we really don't talk much about the intensity. And so I've had the feedback from some women of, I really didn't feel prepared for how intense I felt. And I felt like I wish I had known a little bit more that it would be like that. And of course, every woman experiences it differently. So there's a lot of differences with that in my class. But one of the things I do is talk about how intense it will be, but, you know, tools to reframe that pain and to manage it so they do feel like there's not something wrong with them. Mm-hmm. You know, if they go in and they're doing the breathing, they're doing all the tools, but they're still feeling all that intensity. It's like, yeah, you might still
feel alive. Right, because some people talk about feeling like I must be doing it wrong because
exactly.
I still feel pain.
Exactly, yeah.
But everybody's different. I mean, I do see – I feel like my observations as a male doula that it's sort of a mix between three things, pain and pressure and pleasure sometimes.
Yeah, right.
So the three Ps. But it's all intensity that you're just not used to. So intensity is scary.
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting is just was at a birth last night where I saw this again, where labor came on kind of quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that textbook that we talk about where it's going to come on slow and get bigger and they're only 30 seconds apart and you can talk through them. Bam, it hit.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see like the fear of a deer in headlights on her every time the contraction would come. And then she would use every muscle and organ in her body to fight it and not relax into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in her case, they just came right on top of each other, one after another after another. And in your mind, you're like wondering, that's sort of like what active labor looks like. And you start to wonder, maybe she's more progressed than we thought and it's just moving very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then the midwife checks her and she's 3 centimeters. So the interesting thing about it was there's nothing anybody could do, because my superpower is I do a lot of body work.
Uh-huh.
So if things are easing in and it's getting more intense, I can use massage and reflexology mm-hmm. and cranial sacral therapy and mm-hmm. just even cranial massage and jaw release
yeah.
to help calm her down, feel safe so that the intensity mm-hmm. feels more like pressure and pleasure than pain. But when it comes on that quickly, just even any more touch just makes it too much. It's already yeah. too overstimulating. And in her case, what happened was she was starting to find her rhythm a little bit
mm-hmm.
and she had to pee. And when she sat alone mm-hmm. in the bathroom for a minute is where she found her groove. Nobody around her, nothing around her.
Yeah.
And you could see over the next 20 minutes, her endorphins kicking in, mm-hmm. like her own medications kicking
right.
in from the inside out. And she got very comfortable into a beautiful rhythm.
Awesome.
And eventually in the tub and, you know, labored down to have her baby.
Right.
But I think we forget sometimes at that point, her husband was like, there's no way she's going to make it. I'm like,
yeah.
No, it changes. Like there are phases of labor. It
mm-hmm.
changes. And she is going to get relief. It's just going to come from inside.
Yeah.
And I feel like probably hypnosis helps you ride through that period and bring your defenses down a little bit.
Right, right. And I feel like that's one of the reasons for a lot of women I've worked with and for myself as well, actually, like the first few hours are actually the trickiest because they're starting to listen to maybe hypnosis recordings or I'm doing a little bit with them, but it's so new and it's so overwhelming and they haven't found their groove. I mean, that's a great way to put it. And even though, you know, usually a few hours later it's more intense, they've like settled into like this rhythm with the contractions, and they figured out like, okay, when I breathe like this, I get relief, or when somebody presses my back just like this, I get relief. They find a recording or I say something that just like triggers relief in them, and so I'll say maybe that affirmation over and over and over again. But it's like the deeper we get into birth, for a lot of them, for some of them, they say the more comfortable I get or the safer I feel. That's what I've heard a lot. The safer, I felt so much safer as we got deeper into it.
Mm-hmm. I think because if you feel safe, your sympathetic nervous system is able to shut down
exactly.
even when you feel pain or intensity.
Right, right.
Is there a difference between hypnosis and meditation?
So the main difference is with meditation, and there's so many different types of meditation, but I'll just talk about the type where you just close your eyes and you let your mind go wherever it wants to go. With hypnosis, we're very intentional about the language that we use. So your body, it's a similar feeling in your body, you know, being relaxed, but being aware. But the hypnotherapist, you know, when you're doing heterohypnosis, which is somebody hypnotizing you, it could be a recording, it could be somebody that's there in person. We, again, use really specific language that's very gentle, especially with birth, very loving, very positive. We're not dredging up like old scary memories. You know, we're very much in the present. And about figuring out what they want to be feeling and how they want to be breathing. And yeah, with meditation, their mind kind of goes wherever. But yeah, with hypnosis, I'm their guide.
It's very directed.
Down the trail, exactly.
And what about for somebody, because I know for me, I was trying to decide between Bradley Method and hypnobirthing.
Yeah.
And I went to that way because whenever I do a guided meditation, even
uh-huh.
if I'm guided, I fall asleep.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I can't stay present.
Yeah.
So I was like, maybe that's not for me. So how do you help people understand, like, how, even if it's not meditation doesn't
mm-hmm.
work, or not that it doesn't work for you, but
mm-hmm.
how do you help them understand if that would work for them, I guess?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. So with hypnosis, we're really talking to the subconscious mind, and it's really common for people to feel like they've fallen asleep when really a lot of times they're at a level even deeper than sleep. And so while their conscious mind isn't totally present and focusing on what's being said, the idea is that your subconscious mind is listening and absorbing the messages. I've had plenty of clients that come in and they say, oh God, I totally fell asleep during that one, but I'll ask them some questions later and they remember. They can recall like what
Ooh.
I had been saying,
yeah.
even though they felt like they had been asleep. It's like you weren't actually, you know. It's and that's why it's such a restorative practice. It's really nice for pregnant women who have like insomnia or need to take a quick nap during the day. You know, they can listen to a 15-minute recording and feel like they've just been asleep for 2 hours.
That's really interesting because I have a medical background in terms of emergency medicine. I worked on ambulances for a long time as a medic. And sometimes unfortunately, more than once, I was involved with situations with people who I knew, friends of mine, that were unconscious after trauma. And in both of those particular cases that I'm thinking of, one really clearly sticks out at me where she was unconscious for a while, and people came to visit her, and doctors came to look at her. And when she came to, when she really came to, she had questions about everybody who had been there.
That's fascinating.
But she was unconscious.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I think that in, I've been to a bunch of Scientology births, and I can't speak to it specifically because I've never studied Scientology, but they have this concept of being quiet, of not having any noise during a contraction. Because I think the way it was explained to me was during that contraction, there's some pressure on the baby. And that any kind of talking or voice or noise that takes place then will be ingrained in the baby.
Well, that's interesting.
And so, you know, I guess they don't want a whole bunch of cusses.
Right.
You hate this baby. Get out of me, you baby. You know, and things like that. That's my sense on where that comes from. So it's sort of interesting.
Well, and especially some women that, get the, like, really high-pitched kind of scream, and that really takes them out of themselves. And a lot of times they get kind of shaky and they tense up. And so I tell them, and if you want to make a sound, that's fine, but keep it, like, really low and guttural. And that actually helps to support the natural expulsive reflex and just, support all aspects of them.
What about somebody who may be, like, a type A personality where you, like, really need control? Does that, does hypnobirthing help someone like that? Or does that, is it for, like, a certain type of person? Does it work? Because, I mean, not everything works for everyone. But do you have, like, certain tools maybe to create, like, cater it to types of people? Is that how hypnobirthing can work?
That's a great question. I think it definitely works well for a lot of type A women. I know that I am one. And it really, it really helped me because it helped me realize, okay, it gives me all these good tools, and I learned for the most part, like, what might happen during different phases of birth. But most importantly, it helped me realize that I need to release a lot of that control, and it taught me how to do it, you know, because people just saying, oh, well, just let go of control. And, you know, it's like, okay, but how? Like, I need you to show me. And so I think a lot of, you know, specifically the hypnosis that's used in hypnobirthing can really support the type A mom in releasing a bit of that control. And the longer I've taught the classes, usually I just have about two couples in the class, so I can really tailor it to who they are and what they need. And I ask them a lot of questions to get an idea of, again, like, who they are and what type of guidance they need. So, yeah, I do make little tweaks as we go along.
Nice.
Yeah.
I find, because we used to, my wife is also a doula and she's a psychologist. We used to do our own childbirth education class, and I feel like childbirth educators as a whole have a very difficult balance between giving enough information so you don't feel like you're showing up to a really unusual test completely unprepared. But not so much information that you're over, you're just constantly overthinking and overprocessing. That would be a challenge by itself. And then add to that the fact that everybody's a little bit different. So how do you – it seems like a tough balance. Sometimes, for example, if we talk about cesarean birth in a general childbirth education class, you sort of have the see no evil, hear no evil. People cover their eyes, ears, and don't want to hear anything about it. But I think it's sort of important to talk about it because it's going to happen for some people. And if you don't know what to expect, it really hits you, I think, a lot harder than if you've been prepared for it. But then other people don't want to put it into the universe. So
Well, and that's one reason in the book I do, in a really gentle way, talk about epidurals. And I have a link in the book that goes to a page that in a really non-threatening way goes over what happens during a cesarean birth so the mom can feel prepared, but she doesn't have all the gory details. And then I have after the vaginal birth preferences in the book, cesarean birth preferences to let the woman know that you can still feel empowered and you can still make choices. With an emergency C-section, it's a little bit different, of course. They just have to get in there and do it. But, you know, if it's a scheduled C-section, there are preferences that she can request. And she really can tailor the experience. I've had women that were clients of mine that had beautiful cesarean birth experiences. And they loved everybody in the room. And it was this really magical birth, even though it was a surgical birth. So, yeah, I feel like there's so many ways.
It still is when it's not an emergency.
Right.
It still is that moment of birth, which is magical, whether the baby comes out an inch higher or an inch lower.
Right.
But it used to be that cesareans weren't safe.
Yeah.
Women would die.
Yeah.
And so all of the energy, even though two things were taking place at the same time, a baby's being born and there's a surgical procedure, all of the focus had to be on the surgical procedure because we needed to do everything we could to keep that mama and baby safe or alive even, you know. By the time 1915 came around, roughly, we had it down. We had it safe. And we've only improved it since then again and again and again. So now that it's safe, predictably safe, we can turn down some of the focus, dial it down on the surgery, and dial up that magical birth experience.
Exactly.
And there are a lot of hospitals that are sort of finding that balance, letting more people into the room with you, not strapping your hands down and legs down necessarily, being able to see it if you want to see it, being able to put the baby right on you if the baby comes out, you know, strong and healthy, and other birth preferences like that. So, yeah, cesarean birth is not always a terrible thing.
Right, and nothing to be ashamed of. There's so much shame. It's like, and I've had moms that didn't want to tell anybody, and I had to do a lot of work with them on feeling like they could really own that experience, and they didn't have to be ashamed of it.
That was one thing that I was talking to Dr. Berlin about a little bit, aside from coming to interview you, is just how much... where did all of this competition, I don't even know if it's competition, but this energy around it's not a birth, or women who had a cesarean section, they didn't really have a birth. Really? Mm-hmm. Because I'm pretty sure a baby came out.
Exactly.
So I don't know how it's not a, like, and you can't voice that. Like when you read these messages, you feel for those ladies because, I mean, maybe they had contractions. They they felt things. You know,
they were pregnant for 9 months.
Of course they had a birth.
I think cesarean birth gets a bad rep because it's overused. It's, you know, I think it's an amazing thing that when we need to or want to, we can get this baby out safely another way, an alternate route. The worst thing would actually be someone who needs a cesarean who doesn't have access to one.
Yeah.
Right.
But not a far runner-up is somebody who doesn't need one and doesn't want one and gets it pushed on them. And that happens a lot still in this country. So I think because there's so much push towards medicalization, there's so much push back against it.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's sort of dangerous because then you surround yourself with a provider who is responsible for your health and well-being and they recommend intervention and you don't trust them.
That's
a difficult balance too, also for childbirth educators because we're the ones giving them that information.
Right. Yeah. I always encourage asking lots of questions. You know, it's like, don't feel like you can't trust them, but feel like you can have a dialogue and you don't just have to say, oh, sure, whatever. It's like, ask questions if you're curious, you know, why you need an intervention or what possible side effects will be. Have that conversation, you know, not to say that you're going to start an argument, but just talk to them about it, you know.
And if dialogue's not allowed, then you're probably not with the right provider.
Exactly. Right. So. Exactly. Yeah.
Bailey, you're fascinating. And I do want to talk about feng shui in general. And I want to talk about your book, Feng Shui Mommy, but we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. We're going to come back with Bailey and talk about this wonderful book. We'll see you in a minute. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby. Not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. It is Dr. Elliot Berlin here with our co-host Kristen Polacy and Feng Shui Mommy author Bailey Gaddis. Welcome back.
Hi, thanks.
Hello.
All right, Bailey, we talked about your fascinating like leap into everything baby, childbirth, yeah. and pregnancy. Where does feng shui come in? What is feng shui? I think most people, it's fun to say.
Yeah, it is fun to say, right? So to put it really simply, it's the ancient Chinese philosophy of harmonizing humans with our surrounding environment. So making sure, essentially, that our environment makes us feel good. And when I talked earlier about being an IVF coordinator before I had my son, but I also had a home organizing business in Los Angeles.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and it was interesting because most of my clients were pregnant and they wanted help creating a really serene nursery. And so when I was working on the proposal for the book, I thought, okay, well, I'm really good at helping people create a wonderful environment around them, and that's really important. But what about the environment within us, you know, our mind, our body, and our spirit? How do we balance that? How do we harmonize that? So I kind of created my own definition of feng shui with the book. You know, there are, of course, a few chapters that directly focus on literally feng shui and some of the main principles of that, and setting up a really peaceful environment in your bedroom or the nursery, wherever your baby will be those first 6 months. But beyond that, you know, it's about nurturing that inner environment for the mother so she can go into motherhood feeling balanced, but knowing that, of course, we're going to get knocked out of that. You know, it's not a reality for, I don't think, any mom or any human being that they're always going to feel harmonized and balanced. But to know what it feels like to have that balance and harmony and to have tools to get back into it when we're kicked out of it.
And I guess what to aim for.
Exactly.
Once you know what it can be like, you at least know where you're trying to get.
Exactly.
Which is half the battle.
Yeah.
So is feng shui different for different people?
That's a good question. In regards to like literal feng shui, when you're using it in your home, there are definitely, I think, different levels. The way I used it was a very simple way, you know, good lighting, having fresh air, utilizing colors in certain ways, not having clutter. That's, in my opinion, number one, not having clutter around you, you know, some auspicious objects. And then you can take it a step further and get into, you know, what direction your door faces and having a plant in a certain corner of your space, which I think is amazing. But for me, especially when I was a new mom, I just didn't have time to become an expert in that aspect of it. And I think for a lot of moms, they want quick tools to, you know, reach that state of balance. And so, yeah, I think for most moms, the way that I describe feng shui in the book is really relatable and really easy, you know.
Yeah. So it's more of a general feng shui is more of a you and is more of a general organization and a setting that's comfortable and calming to you.
Exactly. That's at least how I talk about it in the book.
Yeah, which makes sense. I don't know. Did you see the Penn and Teller show about feng shui?
No, I wish.
They did one on chiropractic too. They had a series called Bullshit.
Oh,
They did one on feng shui where they had this house set up and they would bring in all these different feng shui experts.
Yeah.
And get their advice, you know, hire them to set up their house feng shui. And one would move the lamp over here and the couch over there. And the next one would come and be like, no, this is all wrong. The lamp needs to go over there and the couch has to go over here.
Yeah.
And they're like, obviously, there's nothing to feng shui. But to me, I didn't take that out of it. I just taught what I took out of it was that different people respond
exactly
to different what's comfortable to you may not be comfortable to me.
And what I tell people is walk into a space and notice how it makes you feel. And that's going to be different for everybody. And then make adjustments until you feel good about it. You know, one color that makes somebody feel really serene might totally irritate you.
Yeah.
You know, so with color choices, furniture, all of that, I mean, it's really about how it makes you and your family feel, which is individualized for each and every family.
Sure. Think about music. I mean,
exactly.
Some types of music I love when my kids are like, Dad, God, what is that? Exactly. Does that qualify as music?
My son says, your music is boring. It's like, where did you learn that word? You're 4th. This is boring.
So, you know, that's how did Penn and Teller feel about that?
Yeah, that's great.
So, Kristen, you read through this entire book.
I did.
What stuck out to you? Because you're also a new mommy, so.
Yeah, I think for me, it was the small things, because you do feel really overwhelmed, I feel like. Any new mom I talk to, it's like, you're just like, sleep, yeah. I miss sleep. Yeah. And I felt, when I read it, it was so easy to read, and it was really funny. So
thanks.
You almost like then are allowed to put yourself in this thing where you don't have to take yourself so seriously.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you talk about clutter, because I feel like as a new mom, I can never keep anything clean.
Yeah.
Like, I can't. So when I was reading it, I was laughing, like, okay, I could try to do that. And then I come home and I'm like, I didn't do it. but you want to get there. And I think that it gives you a space to put yourself in a position to get to a place where you feel comfortable. And I wish I read the book before. You know, it was like one of those things you wish you would be like, I would recommend this to someone, because it gives you a lot of things to think about before the baby comes. So maybe then when you get there, you're not so far into the, I can't put anything anywhere because I don't know where anything is.
I bet you get that a lot when you go meet people. That I had read this before. We made a documentaries, a series of birth documentaries, and I hate them, but I get emails all day long from people who say, I wish I saw these before I had my birth experience. Well, just have another one.
Exactly. And that's what I always say. It's like, and I write it in the book, it's like, this is the book that I needed to read, you know, and that's why I'm one of the many reasons I'm looking forward to having another baby.
Those are the best books.
Yeah.
You know, when
you
see something that you wish you had and then you create it and then other people benefit from it. Yeah. Speaking of organization, I really like the way you organize the book. It's a very organized book.
Yes.
It's broken down into the 4 trimesters, which is a funny term, because I thought tri meant 3. But you have the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd trimester that are traditional. And then what is the 4th trimester?
Yeah, so it is what is commonly referred to baby's first 3 months out of the womb. And some people call it like exterior gestation, because it's believed that, you know, the brain's not fully developed until about 12 months. But if we waited that long, it would be really difficult to get that head out of us. So, you know, those first 3 months, the baby is really vulnerable. The mother, of course, is really vulnerable. For me, when I look back, that was almost the most difficult, quote unquote, trimester, because, you know, when you're pregnant, really all you need to do is eat well, get some exercise, don't get too stressed out, drink your water, you know, and your baby hopefully is healthy. But when the baby is out of you during that 4th trimester, you're still hopefully taking care of yourself and your own needs, but then you're playing double duty, because the baby needs to be fed and the diapers need to be changed, and there's so much happening and your body's healing regardless of what type of birth you had. There's a lot of healing to be done. You're getting to know your baby, your new self. I mean, it's so overwhelming. So I really thought it was important to speak to that and to offer really simple tools and pieces of information that would make that 4th trimester, quote unquote, easier.
Yeah. Seems like there's even the 5th and 6th trimester.
Totally. Yeah.
So maybe a sequel.
You keep going and going and going. Exactly. Yeah. I'm working on it.
Yeah. When to introduce
I also
want to
see
food.
Feng Shui Daddy, by the way.
Yeah. We're working on that too.
Too, because when I, you know, if I come home from a stressful day and the house is chaotic.
Yeah.
My stress just becomes magnified. If I come home from a crazy day at work and the house is organized, just even just organized, it changes me. It's so settling and relaxing,
exactly.
And I'll get a good night's sleep because of it, and it doesn't snowball into something bigger.
Yeah.
And even as a kid, I remember cleaning my room, not just organizing, but just stuff's everywhere. It's not a settling feeling. And then as I start to put that away and close that drawer and put things where they need to be, it slowly transforms into a better habitat. And by the end, you just feel good. And in fact, I have that with my work that I do. Somebody once asked me, because I see sometimes 15, 16 people in a day, and I spend a lot of time with our patients. It's always at least 30-minute visit. And they say, how can you do so many of these and not get tired of it? But that's actually how I feel what I'm doing with the body. Meaning when you come in and the muscles are all bunched up and jumbled and tight and dysfunctional and the joints are not aligned well or moving well, and slowly but surely, it's for me, it's like literally taking taking a sock and putting it on. I'm releasing that muscle, paving a road that's all unpaved,
yeah.
and putting things back where they need to be. And at the end, when it just, it's so functional, mm-hmm. it actually feels rewarding to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, of course, it feels rewarding to you.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the questions that she answers in that fourth trimester are things that it's like basic things you wouldn't know. And if you don't have your family close by or you don't right. have someone who's done it before,
yeah.
that's like you're thinking there and you're like, yeah, what is their poop supposed to look like? You know? And
I answered the questions that I didn't know.
Yeah. yeah. And even like, and then there's even more. And then you go and you go to get the information and there's so many right. answers. So yeah. it's like a nice place to, okay, let me go here because yeah. it tells me at least the basics.
Right.
And
right.
I thought that was really nice because I think that is just, there's so much information out there and
yeah.
you go and it could be really overwhelming, like you said.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Yeah. And I tried to create something that would, yeah, again, provide that base knowledge. But then, you know, in the book, and you've read it so many times, I'm like, and if you have extra questions, ask your care provider, you know, the one person that specifically knows your medical history and mm-hmm. can speak to your unique situation yeah. versus the internet that has no idea. You know, like all the people on the forums, they only get like little pieces of information. So, yeah, I think it's hopefully a really good complement to that professional care.
And even this may be an overshare, so sorry.
Share away.
You know, I really liked also that you didn't just, you addressed lactation after mm-hmm. and in the fourth trimester about what to expect, kind
yeah.
of, like with how the milk comes in. And if you don't know, like that could be a very scary experience. You know?
I thought that my breasts were going to fall off. I'm like, oh my God, they're rocks and these boulders are going to fall out of me. I mean, I was terrified. Yeah. I had no idea.
And you're like, oh my gosh. And then I unfortunately suffered from hyperlactation.
Oh.
And that's really not a common thing.
Yeah.
So I couldn't find a lactation consultant that would help me with it.
Interesting.
And you mentioned in the book what to look at in your child
mm-hmm.
if they're, you know, like if their poop is like a certain color, that could mean that.
Right.
So I had no idea.
Oh, interesting.
And when I would go to lactation consultants, they're like, oh, well, you're overproducing.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
We want them to. I was like, no, but it's not fine for me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I had a really hard time finding help.
Mm-hmm.
So when I read that, I was like, that's one of those moments that I was
great.
Like, I wish I had this
oh.
book.
That's so nice to hear.
But yeah, so I found that it was really, really informative.
Okay. Have you been traveling around with the book?
A little bit. My publisher said it's really hard to get pregnant women and moms out of the house.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So most of my travel has been doing TV appearances,
mm-hmm.
A few book signings, not a lot. And then luckily, you know, radio, podcast. So it's been nice because I haven't had to do so much travel that I'm away from my son too much.
Yeah.
But still, just the little bits and pieces I've done, it's been challenging, but really amazing. And yeah, I've met some amazing moms and women. So
I think because you talk about all the different types of pregnancy and childbirth and postpartum experiences, you know, you're not focused on one. And there's
right.
such diversity. Some people want to have the baby at home or at a birthing center. Other people want to have a baby at a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Some want a midwife. Some want a doctor, medicated, unmedicated, vaginal,
mm-hmm.
surgical. And it's great that we have choices and options. And, you know, once you take away that judgment, and you make each of those choices and options okay. I mean, the
mm-hmm.
whole thing about informed pregnancy, our whole concept is to give you information and you make the choice.
Exactly.
And then we
yeah.
support whatever choice you make, even
right.
if it's a choice that I wouldn't make.
Yeah, right.
And that comes across a lot in your book. So
thank you.
I bet that when you do go interact with people, you know, it's refreshing for them to hear a hypnobirther,
yeah.
you know,
uh-huh.
so open-minded and warm and accepting and in favor of people making their own choices, no matter what those choices are.
Yeah, yeah. I've never met one woman where I feel like, oh, you're making that choice, huh? I mean, I really feel like it's organic for me to support women in whatever they choose. And I've met some women, they're like, yeah, I think I'm going to do this because, you know, my mother-in-law wants me to. And I don't try to stir anything up, but I just ask some questions like, oh, is that what you want? And usually, not really. And I ask, oh, well, what do you want? I'm just curious to hear. And then she'll tell me, oh, like I get really excited about thinking about a birth center birth or whatever, you know, and that gets me really excited, you know, hearing what the woman authentically wants. And it's so easy for me to get behind that, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. And sometimes I'm sure the first person that's ever asked you, what do you want?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And for some reason, people feel like it doesn't matter what they want.
Yeah. And I think there's a big thing about, you know, especially like woman to woman, that it's like if you're making a choice that's different from the choice that I made, you're somehow saying that I made the wrong choice. When, of course, we're not saying that. But I think that's where a lot of that competition comes from, is like proving to ourselves like, well, I made the right choice, and you know, and everybody else needs to birth the way I birthed to validate, you know, my decision. It's like, well, no, you know, what the choice you made, if you felt good with that, then that was the perfect, unique, right choice for you.
For you.
Yeah. But that's not necessarily going to be the case for all other women.
I almost feel like it's after my friends get married, it's that kind of thing. Like they're trying to get everybody else to be married.
Exactly.
You know? When you have a kid, they want everybody else to have a kid too. It's like, makes me feel better about my choice if other people are
exactly,
doing it too.
Exactly, exactly.
And
yeah.
then there's like this strange guilt too, I find, yeah. that some women have, that if their birth plan didn't go the way that they had planned, and
yeah.
then they feel defeated or
right.
like I couldn't do it. And I felt like you addressed that also in the book.
Thank
just
you.
Understanding you kind of try to make it like a safe place,
yeah,
right?
Yes.
Like I think if that's how it came across.
That's
to me.
That was definitely the intention, having the book be a safe place where women could go to become informed but not feel judged, and to get in tune with their intuition. Because I think a lot of us, when we're asked, well, what do you want? It's like, I don't know. Like, how do I figure that out? So I felt like in almost every chapter, I tried to have this like underlying message of getting in touch with that intuition and touching base with that inner wisdom that I feel like even like children have. You know, we all have that voice of the right unique action for ourselves, and it's easy to lose that, you know, the older that we get. So part of the book was, again, touching base with that voice.
And then did that inspire those sections from her heart to yours? Was that kind of where you wanted to go with that?
Yeah.
I felt like there's little parts in throughout the book, right, where it's different women from, I guess, where you've met them. Like, where did you meet these ladies? How did you get to want to share their stories?
So it's a combination of women that I've worked with in person, women that have taken my online courses and have written me stories. And then part of it was the Facebook community that I have, you know, just asking like, hey, this is the topic that I'm writing about. You know, do you have any stories that, you know, would work well with it? And so I just kind of curated all the stories and chose the ones that I felt like really worked best with each chapter. And I just felt like it was really important for women to hear from not just me, but all these other women that had these really unique experiences. And they weren't all just like, oh, you know, my birth was just so perfect. I mean, there's a lot of challenge in those stories, but finding the light in that challenge and finding the lesson in it, and to just see, again, that we can all make different choices, and that is okay.
Yeah, I felt like it made it really relatable,
Thank
no matter
you. Good.
Like where you came, because I didn't have the same experience as them. But I think you can almost like put yourself in their shoes and be like, wow, that must have been rough for them. Or I can't believe that someone could do that. It was I liked that interesting part of the
good. Yeah, find that connection, some empathy for other women. Yeah.
When someone's birth plan doesn't go how they wanted, especially if they wanted a very natural, if they wanted your birth where, you know, they did the hypnosis, they felt mildly uncomfortable,
right.
and there was a human at the end of it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, for various different reasons, you know, water breaks, no contractions come, nothing natural is bringing them on. So they get induced, you know, with a little Pitocin, which turns into more and other, whatever it is. It's it's these snowball effects of intervention, which I think even used under the best intentions, leave women sometimes feeling let down from the birth plan that they wanted.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's guilt, but I think more often I just see they're frustrated. They, for some people, they dream about it for a long time. This is how I want it to be. And they get a vision. I wonder if you have thoughts on ways that you can set yourself up so that if you end up going down that flow chart of choices, you don't feel as let down. But at the same time, to allow yourself the space to be to feel like the loss that you have, even though you're excited about having a healthy baby.
Yeah. Well, and that's interesting that you said that, because I found that one of the most effective ways I can support a woman who had a birth that did not go as planned is, first and foremost, letting her know that she can be upset about it. You know, because everybody's like, oh, but you have a healthy baby, so don't be upset. And everybody shuts down her emotions.
With good intentions.
With good intentions, of course. Everybody's trying to make her feel better. And when I, before I learned different techniques, I was saying that, you know, because of course we're all coming from a good place. We want her to be happy. But what I do now with women that have that kind of experience is I create really specific containers for them to process those emotions. So sometimes I'll go and we'll do some hypnotherapy. I give them journal exercises. I tell them, you know, find somebody to hold the baby for half an hour and you can go cry if you feel like it in a safe space. You know, so figuring out ways where they can release that emotion and process it without getting stuck in it, but also not just like shoving it down where, you know, it might manifest into postpartum blues or sometimes depression, you know, come out in other ways. So to find that balance, you know, of not, again, being stuck, but letting it out.
That's really cool that you give them a tool, the hypnotherapy, to help themselves process and sort of go through the emotions naturally.
Right.
And it's also neat that each of your chapters ends with a hypnosis.
Yeah, yes.
That you get from the website.
Yes.
And bring all of your neat little elements in your tool belt together in this project.
Yeah.
In the book, you talk about chakras.
Yeah.
What is a chakra? Also fun to say.
So I've heard, coming from Ojai, I've heard all different, you know, ideas about exactly what they are. But the way I think of them is, you know, energy centers in different parts of your body, and recognizing that, you know, they all need to be nurtured and connected. And, you know, and I really use them a lot with birth. If I have a woman that, you know, is having trouble finding her voice, you know, and can't express herself. And so we do a lot of work with like the throat chakra and focusing on sending love to that area. I have...
Is this during birth?
Yeah, I'll do hypnosis where, you know, I can tell, I usually don't say, oh, you're not speaking up for yourself. Like, I don't hit it directly.
Right, okay.
I like really like, you know, I just notice. Yeah, I've become pretty good at, you know, reading moms. And so I'll say, you know, let's try this hypnosis. And again, in this really kind of like abstract way, do some work, you know, with that throat chakra and like seeing like a light go to that area and seeing the light brighten, you know, ways to allow her to release that tension. For me, you know, my sacral chakra, that was something that I felt like was like really stagnant, and I had a lot of tension. When I feel stress, when I feel embarrassment, I feel like heaviness in my stomach. And so that's an area where I, like, when I do a meditation, I send a lot of love, a lot of light. So that's why I thought it was neat to just give a really basic overview of the chakras in the book, with an emphasis on the sacral chakra. That's an area that gets, again, like stagnated is the best word I can think of when you're going through birth, because so much is happening in that area of your body. And then one of the favorite meditations that a lot of moms that I work with do, and this is in that chapter, in the sacral chakra chapter, is just kind of moving up your body and sending love and light to those chakras. And you know, I've had some dads like, well, that's like hippy dippy stuff, right? It's like, well, I mean, you can call it whatever you want, but it's really interesting, you know, when you do just tune into your body. I mean, it's really just your body and giving love and attention to different areas of your body.
It must be so cool to have you as a doula.
Thank you.
Because it just occurred to me as you were saying that you're like a jukebox of customized meditations depending on what's going on in there.
Yeah.
Like we can have a playlist of 15 meditations.
Right.
But like you're creating them on the spot just for what
they need.
She needs in that moment, which is really cool.
Yeah, cool. Thank you.
And also I need to get your secret one for getting rid of heaviness in the belly. But that's a separate
issue. You got it.
Everyone.
Yeah, right. Well, we can all use that.
And the sacral one speaks to me a lot, and I'm sure to Kristen as well, because of the work that we do at birth sometimes, leading up to, hopefully, but releasing the sacrum and the pelvis and making it more functional so that it can expand and let the baby through smoothly.
You talk a lot about energy in the book and making a sanctuary space or holding space. Do you find that people don't know what to do with that sometimes, or Because I know sometimes even with what we do, like, you know, talking about energy or even acupuncture, just energy seems to scare people sometimes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's why I try to oftentimes tie it into their, like, emotions or physical sensations. So, you know, if we're talking about feng shui, I tell them walk into a space and notice, like, how your body feels. Do your muscles tighten? Does your breath get shallow? You know, really, like, tune into what's actually happening in your body because it's being affected by the energy in the space. You know, you talked about walking into your home and when it's really cluttered, you feel more stressed out. When it's clean and clear, you can relax. You can sleep better. You know, that to me is energy. The energy in the space, you know, and if it's a really, like, stagnant, chaotic energy, just like a birth space, you know, if you're birthing in a place where you don't feel like you can relax, where, you know, people are arguing, you know, this really uncomfortable energy is being created, your body responds. So that's how I try to get pretty much anybody to realize, oh, okay, this, like, energy or whatever you want to call it affects me in real ways.
I'm just giggling because a few weeks ago I was at a birth where the dad was trying to be helpful, a home birth, and make snacks for people, but then he wasn't minding the popcorn in the microwave.
Oh, no.
And so it burned, and the whole house smelled like burned popcorn.
Yeah.
And then she was just so mad. She's like, damn the popcorn! Why did you burn the popcorn?
Exactly.
Try
the
to burn be helpful.
Popcorn energy is the worst. Yeah.
That's so funny. Oh, man.
Yeah, aromas. I mean, I talk about, like, really tuning into your five senses, especially when you're creating a birth space in the hospital, home birth, wherever you are. Mm. You know, it's like, what does it smell like? What do you taste in your mouth? Like, I've had moms, it's like, my mouth tastes so gross, I can't concentrate. It's like, okay, what can we do about that? You know, like, what are you hearing? The texture of your clothes, of the sheets, and aroma too. You know, in the hospital, I always, in any birth, but especially hospital births, I have my little essential oil diffuser and the essential oils. And every time the nurses walk in, they always say, oh, my God, it's like a spa in here. They relax.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. It affects everybody. It's like it shifts the energy in the space.
They want to come in.
Maybe
I'll just go back in there and check
exactly.
on her.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, so do you work with the essential oils with women also when you do hypno?
I do. I wouldn't call myself an expert in it, but I do a lot of work with, you know, lavender and peppermint are the favorites.
Not burnt popcorn.
Not the popcorn. I have not started working with that one
oil.
Yet.
Yeah, not popular.
So for a lot of women, you know, depending on what they need, you know, if they're really feeling anxious and they need something that will calm them down, you know, we do work with, like, lavender oil, chamomile oil. If their energy is waning and they're really tired, we'll get out the peppermint, the orange blossom. There's a really neat trick if the mom's having trouble urinating, a few drops of the peppermint oil in the toilet bowl and she just sits on it, it actually helps her go to the bathroom.
Really?
Yeah,
that's
so there's
interesting.
Little interesting tricks.
Yeah,
it's neat. I wish I knew that because that was the
I'll
most
tell you
uncomfortable
what, for
part.
For everybody
for
who
me.
Listened all the way through the end of the podcast, there was
go.
Just a big payoff.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I know. When I teach it in my
great.
Classes, people are like, what? And it works. It's really interesting. So
that's
give it a
great.
Try, ladies.
Frankincense, I sometimes use at a birth, and not everybody loves it because it's so earthy, but the people who do just feel so grounded.
Exactly.
When you pull it out.
Yeah, there's so many wonderful tools with essential oils.
Goodness. I could talk to you for hours.
Yes.
There's so much.
Come back, guys.
And I am a doula. I am a childbirth educator. I'm not a hypnobirther. Uh-huh. Feng shui, fun to say, but I've never studied it. Chakras a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I have a little bit of history there. But you have so much bundled up and, like, the way you share it is really receivable. So thank you for that.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It's an awesome book. It's called Feng Shui Mommy. Where do we find it online?
You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, all major bookstores, and on my website, baileygaddis.com.
Well, we will look for you over there, and we'll also link it with the podcast. I want to thank Kristen very much for being here and sharing, because you really have that new mommy perspective that I lack. And you've contributed greatly to the conversation. I hope you'll come back with us.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. Share us with your friends and visit us online for access to our blog, documentaries, and other pregnancy and parenting resources at informedpregnancy.com.
Give me the news. I got a whole lot of questions.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.